Wow, what a day. Welcome into the show, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. We have a lot to touch on in segment number one. Pat Boylan, Pacers Radio Network, going to join us at 4:25. And look, the feeling around the team and where they currently stand is largely positive. But once again, the common theme of this season has been when the Pacers have played teams in the middle of the Eastern Conference or NBA for that matter, they are a very different team than when they play, honestly, playoff-level teams. They are so much better against playoff-level teams. Last night was their third loss to an under-500 Chicago Bulls team. Now, the Chicago Bulls currently are very safe in the play-in, but as we know, the play-in isn't technically a playoff berth. So you've struggled against teams like Chicago, teams like the Hornets. You've lost several times to the Toronto Raptors. You've had some just bad losses, and I hate to kind of just go over the same exact storylines day after day after day with the team, but it is a very big concern. Now, the hope is when you turn it on for the playoffs, whether that's in the play-in or playoffs, right now you are holding and grasping on to the number six seed. You're still there, but you're only a game ahead, and the teams that you're battling with, Miami and Philadelphia, are respectfully a game and a half and game back of you right now. So, again, the urgency is still there with eight games to play, but Indiana got a little help last night by Philadelphia losing, but certainly didn't gain much, if any, ground. And what a golden opportunity it would have been. You could have even been close to the 5 seed or the 4 seed. But anyway, we'll get the feeling around the team with Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network, because it feels like it's been a seesaw sort of season that way. You feel great about yourselves, and then there's that middle ground where you face teams like the Chicago Bulls, like the Atlanta Hawks, and others that, you know, your record should suggest at 41-33 that you should master those tasks at this point of the year. So we'll see how it plays out. We'll dive into that topic with Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. It's pretty secure the Pacers will at least have a play-in spot, but you would certainly like to be in the top 6 seed so you don't have to play against the teams that, quite frankly, have given you the most trouble, and that would be the teams 7, 8, 9, and 10 in the standings. If I were to ask you this about today, which is just kind of interesting, like, what would you more likely watch today? Would you watch opening day or the Sweet 16 games in the NCAA tournament? Now, obviously, opening day is most oftentimes in the middle of the day. You know, I've gotten the comments before about my feelings on baseball, and I've been pretty vocal about that on this program throughout the last couple of years. Make no mistake about it, folks, and I give this speech every year on opening day. You're going to hear me be very realistic about baseball, and I think it's fairly accurate, everything we discuss about Major League Baseball. Fact of the matter is, if there's one sport out there that I would go see, that I would go to a game, that I would honestly be a season ticket holder for, it would be baseball. It's outside. The ballparks are unique. You get to see multiple different teams. Heck, you get to see different players almost every single day because you see a different starting pitcher. You get to see guys in and out of the lineup and really get to see a roster of 50, 60 deep of your favorite team. And, oh, by the way, as we know, when people go to games, they also go to games to see opposition. I love baseball. The quirky uniqueness of it, there's nothing like going to a baseball game. You know, the NFL, if there's one niche that baseball has against every other sport, nobody is saying, except for a couple of venues, okay? A couple of venues in the NBA and the NFL, like Lambeau Field is iconic. But nobody is exactly saying outside of the Indianapolis area, man, I can't wait to get to Lucas Oil Stadium. You're going to Lucas Oil Stadium to see the matchup. And maybe that's where baseball has it twisted a little bit, that it's more about the ambiance and the uniqueness and the experience than it is about the players and the game itself. I don't feel that way because I want to go see great baseball games. You know, I love going to Great American Ballpark. I think it's a wonderful park. You know, when you talk about baseball, you talk about the parks you've been to, less about the games you've been to. But in some ways, baseball could lean into that, and they haven't. They haven't leaned in to marketing their young talent. Their most recognizable face for the last several years has been Mike Trout, and he is fairly invisible. You know, I want baseball to be great. I want baseball to be talked about more. I want baseball to be amongst the NBA and the NFL. I do. And at one point, it used to be, back in the early 2000s. Every single day, you'd hear about the next transaction, the next $200 million contract in the Major League hot stove. We don't get that anymore. We don't. Because baseball has largely become regionalized, and there's really no end in sight from that standpoint. And so for markets or states such as Indiana, that happens to be right in the middle of all these different teams, it has changed a lot. You know, I want the Cincinnati Reds to be great. I really do. Going to games and that fan base, and you know, you see the attention opening day gets in that town, and they care about baseball. My question would be this: how's that stadium going to look in 3-4 weeks? You know, I've always been marveled at the fact that baseball is very much, if you're good, you'll get attendance. If you're not, you won't. And that even goes for some of these bigger cities as well. I want baseball to be great. I want baseball to be a mainstay in the sports conversation day after day after day. I hate to say it, though. They've got a really big uphill battle. They do. And while the NFL continues to take market share, the NBA is trying to keep pace. I think the NBA is very stagnant right now. Baseball has continued to drop and drop and drop in popularity. It has. Unless you have a team. If you have a team that you follow, that you are energized about, from a regional standpoint, you're going to follow your team. But at the end of the day, from a national standpoint, what are you more going to watch? You're going to watch an NFL game or a baseball game if you have no affiliation with it? I think the answer is pretty darn clear. I love opening day. I wish it was made a bigger deal like it used to be. You know, I sound like a get off my lawn guy, but I feel like everything's realistic here about baseball. It has nothing to do with dogging baseball because, you know, I went to a couple Colts games this year, okay? I went with friends. We wanted to be a part of the experience, but, you know, I'm just as happy being home, sitting and watching the 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 8 o'clock games, being home on a Saturday and watching, you know, games. I followed a lot of Ball State football. I did. But I went to one game this year. I did. You know, if I'm home and watching it and being able to immerse in it on my own couch, I'm gonna do that, okay? I am. And, you know, the hope is I can get out to more games, but, you know, my life's about to change coming up in September. It's not about me, okay? I can't remember, other than a high school game, I did go to a couple of Ball State men's basketball games this year. I can't remember the last time I went to a Pacers game. Can't remember. It's been a minute. You know, and I got to be honest about that. You know, and again, maybe the game is not attracting me. Maybe it's not for me, and that's okay. It's all right. But I will tell you this. I try to make plans every single summer to get to at least 3 or 4 different games in baseball. I love the experience. I do. I love the experience of going to baseball games, and it has that niche, and baseball should lean into that more. I don't know. Anyway. Okay, so the Sweet 16 games that begin tonight and go through tomorrow and then the Elite Eight this weekend. Let me ask you this question, okay? We watched the first two rounds because of the wackiness of it all, and we got some of it, but really this year it was pretty darn chalky. And what I mean by chalk, if you ever heard that term before, it's been a lot of chalk, which means the top, the bigger, the better seed more often than not got through. You know, we had the Duquesne story. We had the story with... the team that upset Kentucky anyway. You know, it's been a week, okay? We've got a lot more focuses anyway. That 13 seed, they move through. We had some double-digit seeds that move through, and that's great. But we are at the Sweet 16 level, and there is one double-digit seed that's still alive, and that is NC State. And I think all of us would agree that NC State is not quite the darling or the team that people embrace as an underdog. They're from the ACC. They play the Dukes. They play the North Carolinas. They got hot at the end of the year, won their conference tournament, and got in, and they continued that run all the way to the Sweet 16. If you exclude them from the conversation, there is Clemson as a 6 seed. Who had a really nice year. San Diego State is a 5 seed that people say nobody wants to play them. Okay, and then you've got 5-seeded Gonzaga, and then it's a bunch of 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds. All of the number one seeds are still alive at the Sweet 16 level. I wonder if all of them will be alive when we get to the Elite Eight side of things. We'll see. But does the Sweet 16 having it this way, with the teams that are higher seeded and the teams that in a lot of ways are more recognizable, does that lend itself for you watching more at the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight side? Now, I would say college basketball has gone through an identity shift. You know, back in the days of, you know, you had a lot of one and dones, and you watched teams because of who was playing for them, not just, hey, you're getting to the NCAA tournament side of things. We have shifted so far into the, hey, wake me up in February and March, and then you start to pay attention to the national landscape. And by no means is that a bad thing in a lot of ways, because when you get to the NCAA tournament, again, NCAA tournament set a viewership record last weekend. Thursday through Sunday, it was high rated. And it's one of the few events that stacks up with the NFL in totality. Now, individual NFL games are always going to win. But as far as grouping games together, the NCAA tournament does as well, if not better, than any other sporting event at getting close. I believe, by a comparison's sake, the NCAA tournament in many years has done better than the NBA finals for comparison, which is wild to think about, you know, the professional versus the college. You know, I think it's done better collectively than the college football playoff, that as well. So my question is, as a casual fan, you know, and again, if you're in a bracket challenge, anything that gets you more engaged, like fantasy football, like a bracket challenge, etc., is going to get you closer to watching these things and watching with intent. I get that. But because there's not the typical 11-12 seed in the Sweet 16 that we normally see, does that lend itself to you watching or not watching? Now, you would think the better teams, the higher seeded teams, would be the ones that most of the national audience would be more interested in. That being said, it typically doesn't do as well as the alternative, which is kind of strange, right? But that's the spectacle of the NCAA tournament. Fans want to see a Cinderella team. They want to see a typical 12-13 seed have a crack in the Sweet 16. Don't really have that this year. Now, if I'm looking at this from perspective's sake, you know, Marquette hasn't won a national championship in a while. I think they won one back in the 70s, okay? Purdue, there's a lot of statewide interest because of Purdue, and you want to see them win their first national championship. Gonzaga is a brand that you still feel like is that little bit of an underdog, even though they've had NBA talent, they've been a number one seed, etc. Duke, you either love them or hate them. Houston is a 1 seed. Creighton, you know, there's some interesting stories with these teams. My question is, does it entice the national audience enough to be very energized at the Sweet 16 Elite Eight level. I have no concerns about the Final Four. I have no concerns about the national championship game other than the fact that they play it on a Monday night. I'm never going to give that up. Why college football and college basketball play on a Monday night for their championship games makes zero sense. None. Zero. And they start at 8:30, 9 o'clock on a Monday night. Come on, what are you doing? I mean, it makes zero sense. I digress. But we are seeing a very unique tournament. We are seeing people with better brackets at the Sweet 16 level than any other. Now, I'm not focusing on the bracket side, but what does that tell you? Because I'll just speak from experience. It's hard to really know the 12 to 13 seeds that are going to really make an impact. From a statistical standpoint, you know a 12 is going to beat a 5. You know a 13 is likely going to beat a 4. And maybe every once in a while you'll get a 15 over a 2, a 14 over a 3, etc. So everybody's trying to play those odds. Nobody knew anything about McNeese State. Nobody knew much about James Madison. You know, we didn't know a lot about these teams. We had a crash course with the selection committee on Sunday night, but we're playing the numbers, right? You're playing the numbers saying, well, this happens once every year, so I got to pick a 12. It's a hunch. And this year, more so than any other, you may have one of those on your bracket, but for the most part, you're going to have the 1, 2, 3, and 4s moving forward. That's what we have here. We have a lot of 1, 2, 3s, and 4s. Moving forward, I believe all the number 2 seeds are still alive. All the number 1 seeds are still alive as well at the Sweet 16 level. That is not typical. It is not. Now, 1 seeds, yes. 2 seeds, feels like there's always some little upset. But I'm specifically asking it from the standpoint, is that good for viewership? Like, you would think that this would be good for viewership, but in reality, it actually isn't. So I'll be curious to see how it all plays out, and I'm excited to watch it. You know, I want to follow this Purdue story. I've become a big fan of their team, Matt Painter, etc. I'm fascinated too about how Matt Painter changed his rotation at the start of the NCAA tournament. It's wild. You know, there's people that have watched far more Purdue basketball than me that can say that, and I've learned that along the way. But it is fun to watch the way that they are operating right now, and of course, mad respect to Matt Painter, no doubt about it. So I just thought I'd throw that out there because we might think that having a lot of chalk, as we talk about it, as we say, having those top seeds be represented well lends itself to a better viewing number. I don't think it will be. But we may not be able to compare it because we're living in the moment, not in fantasy world. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to be interesting. I really, really do. So tonight, Clemson, Arizona, that's a 6-2 matchup. San Diego State versus number 1 seed UConn. San Diego State's a 5 seed. 1 seed North Carolina, 4 seed Alabama, 3 seed Illinois, 2 seed Iowa State. So if you were to say, because you've got 2 seeds and 2 1 seeds, how do you feel about all 4 moving on? I think it's going to be very, very interesting. I know in our bracket challenge, in mine, you know, I have a lot of people that have Arizona winning it all, so I would not be upset with Arizona falling tonight because then things get all the more interesting in our bracket challenge, I'll tell you that. No doubt about it. Oh, yes. It's going to get interesting. So thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. We have a lot of Pacers to talk about. You know, I try to be measured with how we approach this, right? Because at the end of the day, did you expect the Pacers to be 41-33? I did not. I expected them to compete for a play-in spot, but maybe not a playoff spot. So they are doing it above expectations at this point, and that's great to see. It is. But it feels like somewhere along the way, the Pacers have graduated to the point where you've got to be realistic about what they have and haven't done, and what they haven't done is done well against the teams that they really should handle, like the Bulls and everything. And one of the things I want to ask Pat Boylan, he joins us next, is this. Is this a situation with Chicago that, because collectively you can look at the losses that they've had against these middle-of-the-road teams. You've lost to Chicago three times. What in the world is it about this matchup? Is it just simply, hey, like every team does, there is one team that doesn't have as good of a record as they do that somehow, some way is just a matchup problem for them? This happens at every level, high school, college, and the pros. Sometimes there's just a matchup out there that's like, it just isn't conducive to the way you play. Is that what Chicago is, or has each game kind of taken on a life of its own? We'll dive into that topic and a whole lot more with Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. He joins us right after this on the Power Talk of Monty WMUN. Yes, welcome back in. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, is always brought to you by Walls Furniture and Mattress, presented, in fact, by Walls Furniture and Mattress. Nebo Run and Muncie, online, wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the show and foreign stock for you, 48 hours or less. And as opening day comes and the weather starts to turn a little bit for spring, your focus goes to your patio. I know mine did as well. I mentioned it to Craig today. I gotta get in there. We added some things to the deck, but anyway, they've got it all for you. And if they have 90% of what they offer in stock, so you're going to get it quickly, because we never know when the weather's actually going to turn. Walls Furniture and Mattress can help you with that. Nebo Road in Muncie, and online at wallsfurniture.com. As we welcome in Pat Boylan, Pacers Radio Network. 8 games to go in the regular season. That went quick. Now, Pat, we were just talking about this, and I want to get your thoughts, because Indiana has now lost to the Chicago Bulls 3 times this season. The difference between the two records of the Bulls and the Pacers, Pacers are like 10-ish games better in the win column, I believe. Maybe I have that wrong there. It's more like 7 or 8. But fact of the matter is this a situation, Pat, of feels like every level that really good teams, there's a team below them that's just not a great matchup, and it continuously pops up. Is that what this is with the Chicago Bulls versus the Pacers, or have each of the three losses been a little bit different?
Yeah, maybe a little bit of all of the above. I think there might be something to that. You know, Chicago started the season really poorly. And after, I think, maybe a 5-14 start to their year, they've been about a 500 team, or even a notch above. And the Pacers never played them in that early stretch. So I do think, you know, it's kind of important to note that this has been a team that's probably been playing more at the level of a Pacers, Sixers, Miami Heat since November. They just got off to a horrific start. If you look at all the games, you know, you kind of just have different scenarios. One of them was earlier in the season. Another one was a game that, frankly, the Pacers just gave away a couple weeks ago. They had a late lead, the Obi Toppin punch out of bounds, and then the DeMar DeRozan shot, and the Pacers lost in overtime. That's a game you probably win at least 9 out of 10 times. And you don't get that one, and the circumstances were a little unique in this one in Chicago last night, and that you're at the end of a 5-game road trip, and the Pacers are now 1-8 since acquiring Tyrese Halliburton on the final game of a road trip that's gone four road games or more. So that's a tough one always. You know, I going into it, you've got a Bulls team playing around 500. DeMar DeRozan's tough. You have the feeling like this would be a tougher one just because of the circumstances in the end of the road trip. My hope was that the Pacers would keep the game close and maybe find a way at the end. So certainly disappointing to be down by 21 at halftime. They made a nice little run there and got it down to 7 in the second half, but then it immediately kind of ballooned back up. So, yeah, I also think it's a team that maybe is a little bit better than some people give them credit for. Unfortunately, the Bulls are kind of mired in mediocrity. They're not good enough to get anywhere near the top. They're not bad enough to get anywhere near the bottom. The Pacers have had some disappointing losses to teams near the bottom of the NBA this year. I would not lump the Bulls games in there with them, although you would certainly like to do better than 1-3 against Chicago this year.
What do you make of, because this has been kind of the conversation that not just myself on this show has had, but others have had there. The biggest fear, obviously getting the top 6 seed guarantees a playoff spot and you play a normal playoff series. But do you have concern, Pat, if the Pacers were to play in the play-in, because it's teams like Chicago, Atlanta, I don't think Toronto's getting in, but anyway, the middle of the road teams seem to have been tougher matchups for Indiana than the top of the Eastern Conference, which is kind of weird because it feels like it should be the opposite, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the story of their season. The Pacers have been one of the top teams in the NBA relatively when they've played some of the top teams in the league, and they've been relatively one of the worst teams in the league against some of the bottom feeders. Now, they're still over 500 against some of those bottom teams, but you'd like to have a much better record than you do. And frankly, I don't think anybody going into the season would have foreseen a circumstance where you beat Boston twice and you beat Milwaukee 4 times and you've beaten the Cavs twice and you've beaten the Knicks a couple times. So it's a hard one to figure out, and that's kind of how their season has gone. It's kind of been this ebb and flow of go on a nice little run and then be right on the precipice of really starting to maybe make some serious inroads toward the top of the standings and then have a little bit of stretch of disappointment. And you can look at this recent stretch as that, too. I mean, they go on this 5-game road trip off of the disappointing loss at home to Cleveland, and you go, okay, could things head south here? And they've been in that kind of situation numerous times this year where you go, uh-oh, if the next few games don't go well, they might dig themselves a little bit of a hole. And then what do? They dominate in Detroit. They go and win against the Warriors. They're close but fall against the Lakers. And then they cream the Clippers the next night in L.A., and 3-2 on the road trip as a whole is still a good result. And so that's kind of been the story of their season. And I guess as it relates to the play-in tournament, I don't know that that worries me any more than anything else. I think the danger of the play-in tournament is just the obvious of what the play-in tournament is. And when you look at the circumstances with the Pacers this year, that compounds it a little bit. And what I mean by that is some years the play-in tournament comes around, time for the play-in tournament comes around, and the 9 and the 10 are within a game or two of 8th. And you go, you know what, these teams have all had about the same year. Let's let them play it out. And then some years you get circumstances like this where there's a really significant gulf between 8 and 9. And the Pacers, you know, if the play-in tournament didn't happen, the Pacers would have a very good chance of locking up a playoff berth, meaning a top 8 seed, before we even get to April, which would be excellent in most circumstances. But because of this, you have to be top 6 to lock up a playoff berth. And considering you've had overall, despite the fact that you haven't played well against them, you've had a much better season than Chicago. You've had a much better season than Atlanta, but there's still the potential to be mixed in with a group of teams like that and then ultimately not come away. I don't know that the result would necessarily scare me, but just that concept in general, to have a much better season than a Chicago or an Atlanta, but then have just a game or two to prove that. It makes for entertaining basketball. It makes for entertaining circumstances, but that's exactly why the Pacers here, are gunning for a top 6 spot, so they don't have to deal with that. And they're there right now, but the margins are very, very slim, and the Pacers don't exactly have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. The good news is 5 of their final 8 are at home, so they're going to get plenty of opportunities at Gainbridge Fieldhouse to try to lock down one of those top 6 spots.
It's Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network with us on the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. This kind of gets brought up at this time of the year, and it feels like it's happened year after year in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference, that middle ground where all those teams are trying to escape the play-in, as you were mentioning, and get that top 6 seed. For this particular group, is it still a good thing with eight games to play? Every game's going to matter, and they're going to play through this. So it's not like you locked up a spot. You're in that leeway period, and you're waiting on what's next. Is that a benefit, a no deal, or could it possibly be wear and tear for the Pacers? Where do you fall in that?
Well, I think it certainly has the potential to be a silver lining. I think anybody, would much rather perhaps be in the four spot right now and have three or four games between you and fifth and be in a really good spot to lock up home court advantage. I'd take that scenario over the one that they have. That said, playing through this for a young team is potentially valuable, and I think so maybe even more from this perspective, which is something that Rick Carlisle's talked about a lot the last couple of weeks. I mean, you think about the environments the Pacers have played in lately. They went into San Francisco at Golden State, played in a tough game, came away with a win. The Warriors haven't had the greatest year this year, but that's always going to be a tough situation to play in. Great experience, playoff-like environment. You then go into L.A., you play in a tight game, you come back from a 17-point deficit to give yourselves a chance at the end. You don't get there, but great experience, playoff-like environment. And then you go and you dominate the Clippers the next night in LA, same building, another playoff team, playoff-like environment. So they're getting a lot of opportunities here down the stretch of the season to kind of simulate what the playoffs might look like. And when you think of the Pacers, well, the Pascal Siakam addition helps a whole lot here because he won a championship, and Aaron Nesmith was with the Celtics and went deep into the playoffs, albeit briefly in his NBA career. Miles Turner's had playoff experience, but it's been a little while. And beyond that, you don't have a ton of playoff experience on your roster. So these type of games that simulate that, I think, are very valuable. So from the perspective of the question that you asked, I think the thing that they stand to gain the most in is simulating playoff-like games down the stretch, sellout crowds, good opponents, games with a lot on the line, and how does a young team like this execute in those scenarios?
Yeah, I think it'll be fascinating that way. And you brought up Pascal Siakam, and I just wonder if the Pacers would – it's got to make you feel better about them navigating where they're at right now and whatever occurs in the play-in playoffs, because as we talked about at the time of the acquisition, the ball in the hands of the guys that are going to make the best plays for you, you now have two of them compared to when you didn't have him. You had a collection of guys that could contribute, but not guys that maybe you put the ball in their hands like a Halliburton and Siakam. So where does that factor in at this time of the year? Do you see the style of which the Pacers are playing right now more of a playoff-like style with what they're leaning on with Halliburton, Siakam, etc.?
Well, I think in general, when you watch the playoffs, there's a few themes that always shine through. The game tends to slow down, defense tends to become a bit more important, and it becomes star-centric. You can have teams that have success without stars or big-name stars. The Pacers, it depends on where you draw the line, but the Pacers of the late 90s, early 2000s, mid-2000s, you could argue they never had a superstar on some of those teams, and yet with some circumstances going the other direction in terms of opponents, and look, we know the story, they could have won a championship. But in general, stars are what matters, and I think of a scenario game where, let's say, you're in a playoff game and you're down by one, and the ball is going to be in Tyrese Halliburton's hands, and it always is going to be in Tyrese Halliburton's hands. But before the Pascal Siakam trade, well, if a team wants to send and blitz him, put two guys on him immediately and force the ball out of his hands, then that kind of forces the Pacers' hand. And they've got other capable guys in that type of scenario. But what I'm imagining now is, okay, let's put Pascal Siakam up there and let's run screen and roll with Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam. And if they want to blitz Halliburton and they want to put two guys on it, okay, now you've got the ball in the hands of a two-time All-Star, a guy who's more than capable of scoring in clutch moments, and you've got a 4-on-3 with him, and he's one of the better passing bigs in the NBA. that's a pretty good scenario if you're Indiana when you take the ball out of your best player's hands. It's something they didn't have before. And, you know, another scenario, you could just give Pascal Siakam the ball and let him go to work. And usually, I mean, this is a guy that even when he misses, you're usually going, all right, that was a pretty good shot, a pretty good look. Rarely does he get in a whole lot of trouble and throws up a prayer. And so if they can continue, you know, to finish off this season and get into the playoffs, and if they are in close games, I think the value of having Pascal Siakam could be the difference potentially in winning a series or going home in the first round.
It was last week when we talked about the quote-unquote slump that Tyrese Haliburton was going through, and certainly in some of these wins and even in the losses, he's been back to his old self. I don't know if it's like, you know, it's not like he was back. It was a very short hiatus, just a couple game stretch. Anything different on what you've seen him and how he's operated to kind of get back to the efficiency numbers that are very, very, very stratospheric, yet we expect him from Tyrese because he's done it all year?
Well, I don't know this because I haven't asked him and I haven't been on the road trip, but my guess is if you were to ask him to grade his level of play over different stretches here recently, he might give himself something like a C for how he was playing during that quote-unquote slump stretch. And that quote-unquote slump stretch was a stretch that most players would love to have in the NBA on any given stretch of games. But we know what Tyrese Haliburton is capable of, and he was struggling, especially with his three-point shot. You know, if you look at his play in the beginning of the season, really up into the point where he had the injury on the hamstring, you probably would have said that's like A, Tyrese Haliburton. And I think on the road trip, you maybe saw B, Tyrese Haliburton, and moments of A, certainly spurts of A, which was really good to see. You know, he had some really nice moments in the Warriors game, especially. He had a pretty good first quarter, struggled some in Chicago. What I'm getting at here is I think positive to see him break out of this slump. Ultimately, a really good sign for Indiana, because at the end of the day, you know, we can talk about this and that, but I still firmly believe the level of play that Tyrese Haliburton is at when this team is hopefully in the playoffs, when we're talking here in a few weeks, is still the most important thing, individual thing, for this team and their potential and where their ceiling could be. You know, I think he's not all the way back to playing quite at that just absurd efficiency level, but I think he took some real steps in the right direction. And the good news is he's still got, you know, eight more games here in the regular season to hopefully get there. And the other good news is, like, I don't know this team was capable of having a stretch where Tyrese Haliburton really struggles relative to his own game, and they could come away with it. They could come out of it still in the sixth spot. And then they could have a stretch where they go and play a pretty tough five-game stretch on the road, and Haliburton looks much better, but maybe not at his peak, and still go 3-2 on the road. I think that's a really good sign for what this team has around him. For, you know, this could go back to the Pascal Siakam discussion, but I think it's much more than him. I think it's how well-rounded this team has become in general. And so the key here the rest of the way is, look, you had a terrific road trip that had a disappointing finish to it. Can you move on and look back at that and say, okay, we're not going to justify it, but it was the end of a five-game, 10-day road trip, and that is the reason it was a blip on our radar. And can you continue forward with a fairly winnable stretch here coming up, home against the Lakers and a couple straight against Brooklyn, and can you get back on course? And if you can, this team is in a really good position, and if Haliburton is continuing to play close to, if not at his peak efficiency level, I think it's fascinating to see what this team is capable of. But as is the case with probably every single team in the Eastern Conference besides Boston, there are still a lot of ifs to be answered here down the stretch of these final eight games. We're hopefully not talking about play-in, but if we are, the Pacers will have an inside track there at 7 or 8. And if we're in the playoffs, then, you know, we'll have those discussions about who their opponent is and how all those things look. But it's exciting to be talking here about potential playoffs with you in late March, because that's not something we've had the chance to do the last few years.
About 60 seconds here, Pat Boylan, Pacers Radio Network. 8 games to go. Are we talking about if the Pacers want to feel secure in the first 6 spots, are we talking about winning 6 of 8, 5 and 3? I know it's just a guesstimate. Where do you stand on that?
It is a guess, but I do think the number that you're shooting for, if you're a Pacers fan and you're looking at this, is 47 wins, which is 6-2 the rest of the way. If they go 6-2, they are very likely going to make the playoffs without needing the play-in tournament. I think if you get to 46, if you go to 5-3, you've got a good shot. But then that's really dependent on what happens in that Miami game. You still got the Heat left one more time. I think 5-3 would be a pretty good result. 6-2, you're where you want to be. If you're 4-4, you're really putting it up in chance. And frankly, if you do that, you're probably looking at the play-in tournament. So, yeah, a game or two here or there down the stretch are vitally important. And we would love to have anybody in the Muncie, the Delaware County area down here. Five more games, regular season, Pacers.com/tickets. The home court advantage could make the difference here down the stretch. And whether we're talking about immediate trip to the playoffs or whether we're talking about needing to earn it through the play-in tournament.
Outstanding. Pat Blue and Pacers Radio Network. 8 to go for the Indiana Pacers in the sixth spot right now, but a lot riding on these last 8 games. Pat, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That's Pat Boylan with us, Pacers Radio Network. We'll step aside, come back for a final segment after this. Back for final time on the program, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, is always brought to you by Sheriff Goslin Roofing. Your visitor, protect your family. Make sure you're doing all you can to protect them. Sheriff Goslin Roofing has been helping families for generations. Remember to call Pete Dahlia or look them up at worryfreeroof.com. Yes, the Pacers have a 8-game stretch here in just about 2 weeks, and we'll see where the playoff kind of picture lies. But yeah, I think for them, the secure spot at 6 in the NBA playoffs would be huge. And man, it'd be great to see. I mean, I know the play-in will get great crowds, but it feels like when the Pacers are in the playoffs and it's a playoff series, Gainbridge Fieldhouse, Bankers Life before it, Conseco before that. I mean, you know, I remember being a part of a lot of those environments. It's a heck of a time to be there, and you know, certainly, I would imagine this state knows a little something about basketball, huh? Speaking of Gainbridge Fieldhouse, that is where the Wapahani boys basketball team is headed on Saturday for the 2A state final. We're going to have a lot of coverage to preview what's coming up on Saturday right here on the program. But very excited about this. We previewed it a bit yesterday. Our pregame coverage. We'll start with a special program hosted by Jared Boomer right here on WMUN at 11 a.m. We will have interviews with several members of the community that were a part of the response to the tornadoes a couple of weeks back. Also, I have the interview with Kyle Nedenrip from the Indianapolis Star, who did a feature on the Selma community and the Wapahani boys basketball team. And so within that hour, Jared Boomer will host it. We'll also check in with Game Site with Rick Johnston, who will be our sideline reporter on Saturday, and Rob Fisher. And then our normal pregame show will begin at noon. Rick and Rob will start that. We'll have coaches' interviews, and then I'll step in the seat, and Rob and I will take you up to game time and give you the live play-by-play of Wapahani versus Brownstown Central on Saturday. So again, stay tuned to social media. We'll certainly keep you aware of everything that we have going on. But I want to thank everybody that's involved with this. Steve Lindell, Brett Busby, Jared Boomer, Rick Johnston, Rob Fisher. I'm a part of it as well. Our team behind the scenes. We have a lot of very exciting things. And of course, this is the first time in 18 years that a Delaware County team has reached the IHSA boys basketball state finals, and certainly we're excited to bring you the coverage coming up on Saturday. So tomorrow we'll preview a little bit of that, also recap some of the NCAA tournament games, and a whole heck of a lot more coming on the program tomorrow. Big thanks to Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network for joining us. Again, very important times for the Blue and Gold, and we'll certainly recap a lot of what's going on there. We are back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 o'clock, right here on the Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Have a good evening.